As we approach Christmas, we start to think about the significance of what we call the incarnation, God becoming man, the Word becoming flesh, as John says in the first chapter, a baby being born in Bethlehem of a human mother and of God. And it's a mystery how Jesus can be fully human and fully divine, but that's what we believe as Christians. And in this story, Jesus displays his full humanity and his full divinity. In this story, Jesus is revealed at his most human. He has good friends. He weeps. And he's also revealed at his most divine, as he shows the power of God in victory over death. Now, as Peter and Si have both indicated, this is a rich passage. There is an awful lot in it. And as I was preparing for tonight, I obviously spent a lot of time reading the passage and reading about it and thinking about it and praying about it and asking God what I should be trying to draw out of this passage to share with you tonight. And I had my prejudices really challenged, because I really felt God was telling me that there should be 3 points to this sermon, all beginning with the same letter. And so I'm going with that, because, you know, that's what I feel. But it did challenge my prejudices. So I'm going to talk about relationship, about restraint, and about resurrection. So starting with relationship, the context for the whole of this story is relationship. It's the relationship of Jesus with Lazarus and Mary and Martha. And he obviously had a really good relationship with his family. John says in verse 5 that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And when he receives the message to say that Lazarus is sick, it actually says, the one you love is sick. And Jesus has other encounters with his family which are recorded in the Bible. John actually refers in verse 2 to this being the same Mary that poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. And that story is told in the next chapter of John's Gospel, when at dinner at the home of Lazarus, while Lazarus reclined at the table and Martha served, Mary took pure nard, an expensive perfume, and poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. This is a picture of an intimate act of love and generosity. It seems to be in keeping with the relationship. But take note of the different ways in which Jesus related to each member of the family and the ways in which they related to him. Lazarus reclined at the table, Martha served at the table, and Mary anointed Jesus in an act of worship. And again, this difference in behavior, difference in personality and character of Jesus' friends is revealed in another encounter with Mary and Martha that's recorded in the Bible in Luke's Gospel. And this story tells of Jesus visiting their home on another occasion, where Mary sat at Jesus' feet while her sister Martha was distracted by making preparations for a meal. Now, many of us will sympathize with one or other of the sisters. And I know I can sometimes feel like saying to God, or in fact to anyone who'll listen really, what Martha says, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Well, actually, I don't have a sister, which is probably quite fortunate. But I certainly have those sort of feelings quite frequently, because I'm an action-orientated sort of person, a doer like Martha. But Jesus' response to Martha is not what she hoped for. It's not what I hoped for. He replies saying, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. In Jesus' relationship with his family, he shows love and care for each member of the family. And we'll see how that unfolds in the story as we go through it. But he makes it clear here, and when Mary's action is criticized by one of the other disciples when she anoints his feet with oil, that Mary gets it right. Mary, who sits at the feet of Jesus and who anoints his feet with expensive perfume. This is really challenging stuff. For many of us, hiding behind activity is a good way of hiding from God and our relationship with him. Whether it's activity in our family, activity at work, even church activity, is often covering up a difficulty with just sitting at the feet of Jesus. How would you feel if Jesus came to your home? Would you be rushing around, preparing a cup of coffee, making dinner, making it look nice, tidying up? Or would you sit at his feet? Do you actually manage to make time in your day to stop being active and to wait on Jesus? To be? Because it's in making time for prayer and quiet that we can encounter Jesus ourselves and grow to know him, to love him, and to experience his love for us. And we all do this in different ways because we're all different. And that's okay. It's part of the beauty of our individual relationships with him. And again, in this story, Martha and Mary behave differently from each other. When Jesus arrives in Bethany, Martha rushes out to meet him while Mary stays at home. And when Martha meets Jesus, she says, "Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." And then, when Mary arrives later, she says the same thing, "Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died." The two sisters both express their heartfelt grief to Jesus. They also express their frustration and disappointment that Jesus could not have been there to make a difference. Again, Jesus listens to them and responds to them, and in doing so, shows deep love to them expressed in different ways. As Jesus sees the grief and weeping of Mary and the other mourners, he weeps too. In the shortest verse in the Bible, that's just a little hint for anyone who likes pub quizzes, verse 35, Jesus wept. Again, Jesus reveals his love and friendship as he shows himself at his most human. And Martha responds to Jesus by confessing her faith and saying, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world." It's an amazing declaration of faith in response to Jesus' promise that Lazarus will rise again and that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Mary goes on, as we've already said, to show her worship when she anoints Jesus' feet. Both of them show responses of love and faith, but they're completely different. But what about the question of things having been different if Jesus had been there? Sometimes we find ourselves in our lives being on both sides of this sort of question. Sometimes we want to say to God or to another person, "If you had been there, it would have made a difference. It would have been okay. Why weren't you there? Why did you let me down? Why have you betrayed me?" But we can also be on the receiving end of that question. For very good reasons, we may not always be able to be there for someone, to be there to make things better, to be there to help. How many of us have had others say to us, "If only you had been there, it would have been different." Particularly people who maybe work in the caring professions or in any sort of ministry. For those of us who are in ministry in any way in the church. And maybe even more difficult to deal with, how often do we put that pressure on ourselves? How often do we experience an internal pressure to be there for others? To be the person who can help, to be the person who can take the pain away. And this accusatory voice can be very powerful, and it's often quite difficult to distinguish the situations where we should or should not be, when we should or should not respond. A painful contemporary example of this is the recent press comment about the social workers involved in the Baby P case. There's a clear accusation that the outcome would have been different if someone had been there or taken a different course of action. And although we may never know the full facts, it sounds as if this may have been true in the case of baby P, but it's not always true. In our own lives, sometimes God's timing is not what we would choose or hope for. Later on in this story, the other mourners say about Jesus, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus is questioned and challenged about why he wasn't there and why he hasn't done anything. These are real pressures that we face, like Jesus did, and we can learn from Jesus how to deal with them. So why wasn't he there? Why wasn't Jesus there? Why didn't he come straight away when he was called? What was he doing? Martha and Mary sent him a message and wanted him to come straight away and to heal Lazarus, but that's not what Jesus did. Why not? He waited and he showed restraint. Just in case you hadn't spotted that, that's the second R. He listened to God and waited for God's timing. And there's a really interesting aspect to the timing of this story that I'd just like to uncover a bit. It would have taken one day, approximately, for the messengers to get from Bethany to where Jesus was in Transjordan. Jesus then waited there for 2 days, and then it would have taken about a day for Jesus and the disciples to travel back to Bethany, making a total of 4 days, and that's confirmed at several other places in the chapter, particularly when Jesus arrives at the tomb and asks for the stones to be removed, and Martha says, by this time there is a bad odour, for he's been there for 4 days. Now the Jewish faith and culture of that time believed that the soul left the body 3 days after death. The third day after death is obviously significant in the resurrection of Jesus as well, but Jesus appears to deliberately wait until Lazarus has been dead for 4 days, and there'll be no doubt that his soul has left his body and decomposition will have started. Well, why? Well, one reason was to demonstrate his power and glory more effectively. And this is inferred in the conversation with the disciples. But the other reason was that it allowed Jesus to model a discipline of waiting for God's timing. He stayed where he was, and he waited. He didn't rush into action. Now, I know that if I got a message, and I'm sure most of us would be the same, saying that my friend was really ill, I'd want to go around straight away and see if I could help, see if I could do anything to help. For many of us, it's a big temptation to want to get on in there and do something, to try and make things better, to try and take the pain away. But this is not always God's way. Jesus shows us clearly that God's timing is perfect. Even though it was really hard and upsetting for those involved at the time. And part of God's timing may be delays, delays that we don't like and that we can't understand, because only God can see the whole picture. And there's a real sense here that the greater the difficulty of the situation, the greater the glory of God revealed in the miracle of the resurrection of Lazarus. And there's also the sense of the need to wait for God's timing, while sitting at the feet of Jesus, a sense of not rushing into action, restraint, a sense of resting with Jesus. Just as in Psalm 23, the promise is that the Lord makes me lie down in green pastures and leads me beside quiet waters and restores my soul, reminding us of the image of Jesus as the Good Shepherd we heard about last week. But tonight, the culmination of this passage is about resurrection and life. Resurrection and life in the context of relationship, our relationship with God. Resurrection and life in God's timetable and by God's grace, not in our timetable or by our instigation. And in order to talk about resurrection, we have to talk about death. And death's a really uncomfortable subject in our society. It's often something we hide from, not least by using euphemisms to refer to death. Euphemisms such as falling asleep. And interestingly, Jesus refers to Lazarus as having fallen asleep at the beginning of the passage. And to start with, The disciples don't understand that he means Lazarus has died. As part of my training, I'm training at the moment for ordained ministry, I've been doing a placement working with the chaplaincy team at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Woolwich. It's been an enormous privilege and a really, really important experience for me personally. I've spent time sitting with people who are dying and with the families of people who are dying. Well, this has its obvious challenges, but as I've reflected on spending time with people as they walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I've come to realise that I've learnt more from them than I could possibly give. But also that I would not be able to be there in those situations unless I spend time myself waiting on God, unless I spend time waiting on God and being filled with that sense of the presence of God, unless I'm strengthened through my hope in the resurrection. And we often have a picture that when we're with the sick and the dying and being Jesus, that we are Jesus to them, that we bring God's love to them. And of course this is true when Jesus arrives to be with Martha and Mary in their time of grief and distress over Lazarus' death. He too was deeply moved and he wept. And sometimes that's all we can do as we walk with people through their trials. Jesus came alongside them and entered their feelings and was deeply troubled in spirit. Jesus revealed it as most human, living out the human experience. But I've also learned in that time at the hospital that as I wait with a person, they too are Jesus to me and reveal God's love to me in a new way. And death is frightening, and it's really difficult. And it is sin that has brought us under death's power. It was the sin of the first man, Adam, that brought his death, and ultimately all of ours. As Paul writes in Romans 5:12, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all men, because all sinned. And when Jesus is so strongly moved by the death of Lazarus, he is troubled in spirit. He grieves with us over death. But actually, Jesus has come. He came to destroy death and to usher in victory over death through his own death and resurrection. For that's what resurrection is all about. Resurrection is God's victory over death. As Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? And Martha shows the then Jewish expectation of life after death when she replies to Jesus that she knew that Lazarus will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus then reveals to Martha, in a culmination of all the sayings about himself, that he is the resurrection and the life. This is the promise that is in and through Jesus that we have the hope of resurrection, but also that Jesus is life, the bringer of life in all its abundance, and that as we believe in Jesus, we can begin to experience that resurrected life here and now. It's a hope for the future and a hope for the present too. And resurrection's more than a vague idea of going to heaven and being with God in some sort of kind of vague spiritual way. The promised resurrection is the resurrection of the body. And it's in this story, the bodily resurrection of Lazarus, that Jesus points to his own death and resurrection and to the death and resurrection of all of us through him. At the beginning of the funeral service, the minister says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Jesus doesn't just bring resurrection, he is the resurrection. And it is in resurrection that we have hope in God's victory over death. And it is in relationship with Jesus that we find the hope of the resurrection. Jesus calls Lazarus to come out of the tomb by name and then releases him from the bondage of the grave clothes, bringing him to new life and new freedom. And that's what Jesus offers us. He calls us by name to relationship with him, to wait on him and seek his will, and to find in and through him the hope of resurrection. The hope of the resurrection life. And this is the great Christian hope, that Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will never die. He will live even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die." Amen.